The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for, the nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com. Welcome to Farming the Countryside. I'm Andrew McCray. Dr. Dan Thompson is professor and chair of the Department of Animal Science at Iowa State University and host of Doc Talk. Many people see and hear his work on a variety of topics related to cattle, and we'll get his insights on what we should be doing to keep the herd healthy. It's our topic for this week's Farming the Countryside, brought to you by Pivot BioProven. It's time to rethink nitrogen. Pivot BioProven replaces nitrogen fertilizer with microbes that adhere to the crop's root system and apply nitrogen each day. 2019 performance report data shows Pivot BioProven consistently outperforms synthetic nitrogen fertilizer year over year, providing corn growers improved yields and a more dependable nitrogen supply that isn't lost to the environment. To read the performance report, go to pivotbio.com. And for more information on Pivot BioProven, just text PROVEN to 31313. Some of you know that besides growing crops, our farm has been raising stocker cattle since before I was born. I've been riding a horse to check those cattle since I was about 3 years old. We buy calves around 500 pounds in weight and raise them on pasture for a few months, usually taking them to a weight of about 900 pounds. In the many years we've done this, it seems there is always a time each fall when, despite our best efforts, cattle get sick. I like to think we've gotten better at herd health over time, but some days you really begin to question what you're doing. I know others feel the same way, and so today we turn to a guy who regularly answers questions on the topic and much more related to cattle. Dr. Dan Thompson is my guest, and we focused on herd health as I caught up with him as he was on the road in northern Iowa. Dr. Dan Thompson joins me, and Dr. Dan, you are headed north this morning as we visit. I think you're checking out some different facilities this morning. Is that right?
You bet. Yeah, we're headed up to Upper Iowa Beef this morning, and going to have a great time touring their plant and just talking about cattle and futures, you know, kind of those mid-sized to smaller packer operations, more regionalized programs, specialized product. Going to be a great day.
You know, we're going to mostly spend our time on herd health, but you mentioned that. I might ask, you know, in this time of COVID, and it's certainly changed the way that maybe some people are raising beef, even consumers are consuming beef. Is that creating more opportunities, you think, for some of these small and mid-sized operations to process beef?
Absolutely. This is the most exciting time to be in the beef industry. You know, obviously, we're still going to have our commodity beef, you know, just like we have Coors Light and Busch Light and commodity beers. But you're going to start to see more of the local IPAs of the beef world pop up and provide that local, full story beef platform. And so there's going to be a lot of opportunities for those small and mid-sized packers in these regional areas to work with beef producers. And there'll be time for beef producers to buy in and things of that nature. But that's definitely the future.
How do you think that beef producers prepare themselves to be able to take advantage of those markets? Because, you know, if I'm out here and I don't have my own plant, I'm sometimes somewhat subject to what others can do for me. But how can I better position my operation to be able to take advantage of that in the future, do you think?
Everything's about relationships. And if you're sitting back and you're just going to wait for someone to come in and bid on your cattle, it's not going to happen. But if you get out and you investigate and you go visit with people and you build relationships, all of a sudden you start to have that conversation of what you could do better or what you could do to help the person that's marketing that beef retail, and then it just snowballs. And so I just recommend you, even if it's your local locker, you'd be amazed at how many producers I know that'll run 30 head through a local locker and sell half beef or quarter beef and more than top the market.
Good conversation. Well, we've got more topics for down the road, but we'll switch over though to herd health. You know, I think about this topic, I guess, all the time, but especially in the fall. We have a stocker operation, so we're buying calves that are 400, 500, 600 pounds and bringing them in. So health can be a big deal with that, of course. Let's start though with the cow-calf producer and maybe start with the cows. You know, as I think about herd health, before I ever get a calf on the ground, you're out there and experience a lot. What should I be thinking about just with my cows in general to make sure that I'm starting with the best health I can before I ever get my calves on the ground?
Absolutely. So it all starts at, you know, health for the calf and the cow. First of all, we want to make sure that cow is vaccinated. We want to, you know, the two five-way modified live viral vaccines for those heifers before we put them in the breeding herd space. 30 and 60 days prior to the breeding season. And then that's the last modified live that I'll put in a female. From then on, it's a booster with a killed product. And you can booster those animals at the time of when you're preg checking with the killed products. We'll give them a lepto and Vibrio and get those cows set up, because that fetal, that calf's immune system doesn't kick in until about 4 months gestation, and after that calf will start its own immune system, that fetus will, so you're protecting the cow, which protects the calf. But then the next thing is when that calf's born, it's going to drink the colostrum, that first milk, and that's probably the most crucial point in time of calf health for scours prevention, and later on that summertime pneumonia on the side of the cow. But making sure that cow's vaccinated and making sure that calf, leave them alone, let them get up, let them suck, let them get that colostrum. Then we can go in and we can ear tag them and do things like that.
What about the nutrition of that cow? How does that play into what that calf's going to experience when it's born, what nutrition it's had while it's been there in the womb, so to speak?
Yeah, it's, you know, we talk a lot about fetal programming. And the big thing is that two-thirds of that calf's growth in the uterus is going to occur during that last trimester. And so, you know, making sure that we have the animal fortified for cow growth or cow maintenance as along with the fetal growth is vitally important. And so whether we have, you know, and here's the key to fetal growth. Know how big your cows are and understand what the nutrient requirements of them are, and then provide it for them. It isn't about going out and just overpouring or overfeeding, and if I overfeed, I'm going to get this big, healthy calf. What we want to make sure we do is that we work with a nutritionist and that we meet the cow's requirements for third trimester gestation, and you don't need to provide more. If you do that, we'll have proper growth, proper health, proper function. It's when we start cutting corners and we don't get the protein supplement out, or we don't get energy supplemented, or we don't get vitamins and minerals, that's when we run into the problems.
You're out there and working with a lot of producers. Do you see one common problem we have? You know, we always hear about vitamins and minerals and things, and that's important to focus on, but if we get too focused on that, are we leaving out some of the basics? I've had other guests that talk about that. I'm just interested in your view of it.
With today's technology and the web and communication, it's pretty hard to, you have to work at missing something if you truly care about your cow herd. But I think the thing that I see right now is this undomestication of our cow herd. And what I mean by that is, you know, here we put a bale on the back of the flatbed and we get out of the pickup long enough to cut the bale wrap off, and we unroll the bale and we drive off. And we're not around the animals like we used to be, you know. I mean, I like that. But it used to be I'd get down out of the tractor or out of the pickup and open up the bale feeder and walk around and cuss as I was opening that thing up and getting stuck and sucking my boots off my feet. But I was around the cows. And they saw that there was something on two legs that wasn't a coyote or a predator. Now we got these fence line bunks. We pull up with the tractor and the mixer wagon, and we're all toasty warm with our radio station on and our coffee, and we feed the cows, you know, and they're on the other side of the fence. They don't know what's in that tractor. And now when we doctor in the pasture, we roll in with the pickup, roll down the window, and we shoot them with a dart gun. And so we're not spending as much time acclimating those animals, acclimating the baby calves, the cows, and things of that. And so when they get to the calves, get to the sale barn, or if you go to wean them and that they don't understand the human animal interaction. And And I will tell you that the thing that we find in our practice is that when we get those calves that haven't been acclimated, you know, fresh off the cow or into a receiving pen to wean them or that, they don't trust us because they don't know us. And unless they trust you and know you, they won't show you the clinical signs of BRD. It's kind of like, would you tell your, you know, would you tell somebody you didn't trust or your best friend your deepest secret? And for a cow or for a calf, the deepest secret in the predator-prey relationship is weakness or illness. And so as we work on that, it really becomes core to your animal health program to acclimate these animals so that they trust you enough that when they just start to get some pain in that foot, they start to limp. Or if they just get a touch of BRD, they start to droop and say, hey, I don't feel good. And then our early intervention, our early treatments work better.
Real good point. So is it just simply getting out of the tractor or pickup more, or how do you try to do it?
Oh, yeah. I spend a little bit of time, if I got time. I mean, there's some days you don't have time, right? So you know, just helping your cows with those babies. We'll get out with that first baby, you know, when that baby's first born, when we ear tag it, that's our first opportunity to interact with that calf. And so we'll try to build that imprint of that human-animal interaction right there. And we'll rub on that calf a little bit and work with that calf and that cow. We're going to spend some time out walking around with the herd as they come up and just when we work those animals and do pre-breeding and when we work the calves in the fall for weaning, we'll bring those calves in. We might run the calves through the chute with the chute open the first time and just let them all funnel through at their own pace. And then the second, we want this to be a good experience. And then the second time they come through, we'll catch them. And then after we wean those calves, we'll spend some time with those calves in the pen. We may just stand in the middle of the pen and then push them from corner to corner. Or I've seen people that'll open up the back gate and actually start to give those calves cues and start to move them with your cattle handling skills and stockmanship skills to let those calves go out of the pen into the alley and then come back in. And a lot of time those calves that are sick or lame will be at the tail end of that group leaving the pen. You know, but then when I go to get them out for re-implant or I go to sell them as fats, they kind of know the drill and they kind of have an understanding. So those are some things that we're doing day to day within our herds, just trying to make sure that we don't forget that human-animal interaction.
Is the best way to identify those that are sick still just visual? I mean, you know, we used to, we're receiving new calves. We have, you know, a thermometer on our chute, and we used to take the temperature of every single calf that came through that chute. Now, since then, we've done some things different, but what tools are there out there? Or is still visual still my best way to identify?
Well, there's a lot of technologies coming on with ear tags that are kind of like the Fitbits and the have actual take the temperature of the animals. Quantified Ag has a platform, but as they develop those, I'll tell you what we focus on is, one, we focus on acclimating, gaining trust of those animals, and then the other time is I will look at those cattle when I put out hay or when I feed that first ration in the morning, because sick cattle don't eat and cattle that don't eat get sick. And they may not be sick, but one of those animals standing out there, standing off by itself, that's the first animal I need to go take a look at. Maybe there's something socially going on in that pen for that calf, but I need to probably take it to the hospital pen, give it a day or two to eat some hay, let it have an environment in which it can compete in. So as we put out feed, we're going to look to see which calves are responsive, which ones aren't, and then the calves that we're going to, the first thing you'll look for when you go in for the visual is one that's been off feed, a calf that's depressed, got its head down, ears droopy, dehydration, the sunken eyes. Sometimes these calves just can't find the water tank. And helping them find the water tank or or helping them find the hay in the bunk and things like that. You know, I wasn't the sharpest bulb in the box. It took me a while to figure out where the water fountain was in the bathroom and that when I went to kindergarten. And that's kind of what we got to do, is be that kindergarten teacher to help them understand. And then the power of observation, where you're looking at those calves every day and you know when one's not doing right, and go get it. And then you start using that thermometer, and then you start using the stethoscope and different things like that to refine your diagnosis of why that animal is acting that way.
If I have one that I'm going to treat, which all of us are going to have that, what is my best method to be able to treat them? And I know that's going to vary a lot depending on your operation. For instance, all of our cattle are on pasture. In some cases, we can bring them to the barn, and we still ride horseback, so that's part of our operation. But, you know, I've got a lot of friends that they may broke something in the pasture, treat it that way. Certainly the dart gun. Just kind of walk through that, because there would be pluses and minuses to each one of those treatment methods, I would think.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, pick one that you're comfortable with and one that you're good at. And if you're going to use a dart gun, still use beef quality assurance guidelines, you know. And so I think the dart gun is a great tool. The downfall is that there's some papers out there that show that the darts don't all deploy enough of the medication all the time, and things to that nature. If you're going to rope and doctor, you know, it's a great skill, and it's a great way. And you know, we just do it in a manner. If you're going to do that, just make sure you're good at it. When I see the wrecks is when people are in a hurry and they're not good at it, and they, you know, they're running these calves and causing, you know, as President Trump said, the cure can't be worse than the disease. And sometimes we can get into these things that happens. And so, you know, facilities, the ease to get the animal to the facility, you know, all of these different things play into it. So I really don't have a favorite, and I don't have one that I hate. It's they all work if you just take the time, use common sense, and understand the limitations or the things that might happen. But you know, there's a positive and negative for everything. But the one thing is early detection, early treatment, low stress cattle handling, regardless of what we do, is the most important.
Let's talk for a moment about the treatment. You know, there are lots of options out there, and a lot of them have been around for several years. So, number one, is there anything new I should be looking at? Number two, if I've got some tried and trusted things, are those still just as good, even though they've been out there for years? What are your thoughts?
Oh, yeah. We've got the best antibiotics that we've ever had. You know, The number one thing is work with your local veterinarian to get an understanding of what exactly, get work with your local veterinarian, get a game plan, get a prescription, have your veterinary client patient relationship, and then don't worry about the antibiotics. Everybody wants to worry about and argue about which antibiotic's the best, or things that all the antibiotics that are labeled for bovine respiratory disease work. What we have to understand is that early detection, low stress cattle handling, those are the keys to treatments working within these animals when they're sick and when we're weaning.
What about PI detection in cattle? You know, we hear a lot about that in different tests that we can do, quick tests. In your experience, is that something we're headed towards, is testing all those animals when we receive them, or what's your thought?
Well, I think that, you know, every situation is different. And right now, I guess the key to BVD-PI testing is that if you're going to do it, you have to do every animal that's coming onto your premise. And now I'm talking about a grow yard or a stalker operation. You know, I'm not talking about the cow herd. I'm talking about if you're
right,
receiving cattle into a feedlot or a grow yard or a stalker operation. If you're going to do one, you've got to do all, because I guarantee you the one that you don't do will be the PI and your entire program is kaput. If you're going to own those animals for, if you're bringing in high risk, sale barn, auction derived type cattle that are commingled, that you know, are those 4 weights and 5 weight cattle, and bigger cattle, you know, maybe even up to 550 weights. Those animals, and you're going to own them for 85 days, or you're going to start them for 85 days, I can make it pay health-wise to do BVD-PI testing on all the animals coming in. But if you're a 20,000, a 30,000, or a 50,000 head yard, and you say, well, I'm just going to do the PI testing on these animals and not these, I don't recommend it at all. The thing about BVD-PI is that 1% of cattle born in the U.S., calves born in the U.S., are persistently infected with BVD. Half of those animals die before they leave the ranch at weaning. So about a 0.5% of the cattle that we receive into stocker backgrounder operations will be BVD PIs. And that's a very small number. But if you spread that out across pens with 100 head pens, what we have found in feed yards is that 1 in 4 pens has a PI. Sometimes they don't cause any problems. Sometimes they cause a lot of problems. And so if you're going to do it, you do everything. You know, if I was going to feed 500 head of high risk calves, I would recommend it. And I would do everything, and I would get my results back, and I would get those BVD PI animals dealt with. The problem we run into is that sometimes we get into these wrecks. We think there's got to be a BVD PI, and we're going to go and test them after the fact. I will guarantee you that if you do that, you're going to be very disappointed in your results, because the BVD PI may have died already before you started testing, and then you're left scratching your head.
Can the testing now, how quick and how inexpensive is the testing? You say that the return on investment you think is there now.
Well, I think it's always been there. I think that the you know, we've got it now where you can go out and you can test those animals. You can send it into a D-lab or to a private testing lab and get those results back in 24 to 48 hours. And then you can go identify the BVD-PI animals. It's really about getting those samples taken and getting them. There's even shoot side tests now, snap tests, but they're more expensive. So I just take them to take them to a lab that's doing it, a veterinary clinic that's doing them, have them do pooled testing to decrease the cost. You know, we find those BVD-PIs and we get them out. Again, this is like buying insurance. Okay. There's times you don't need it, but you still pay for it. And when you get down to that $1.50 or to $3 a head on a 300-pound calf that at the end of the day is going to be worth, you know, $1,000, $1,500, it's a pretty small investment. I think the other key is this, in BVD control. The number one in those calves coming in is using a modified live viral BVD type 1 and type 2 vaccine, because that helps prevent the spread of BVD from that PI animal to those unprotected animals that aren't PIs, right? So I don't want to overshadow getting into the talk about BVD PI testing and overshadow the value and the importance of vaccinating those calves.
Good. Dan, before we wind up, I want to go back over to the cow-calf producer who's perhaps, you know, going to be weaning calves, or maybe they're going to sell calves that are just coming straight off the cow, but they're going to be taking them to auction. I hear a lot of debate about, okay, well, how many rounds of shots should I do? When should I castrate and so forth? What should I be doing to get my calves ready for market, for sale? What can I do to not only make those calves the best health-wise, but also hopefully return me the most money?
So when we talk about castration, the earlier the better. The longer the testicles are attached to the calf, the more attached the calf is to the testicles. So we want to make sure that we castrate those calves as babies. We'll band them right away when we're ear tagging them. we'll castrate them. We want to make sure the horns are disbudded at that time as well, and just remove all the stress of castration and dehorning at a young age. Then when we get into that pre-weaning and that weaning time, the big things are this. We want to make sure that that animal is vaccinated before it leaves the ranch. So you're going to do your branding shots at that. When we catch the cows for pre-breeding, we're going to give those calves a modified live viral vaccine. And then when we wean those calves, we're going to go ahead and vaccinate them again for the viral vaccines, for the Mannheimia vaccine, and with the clostridial vaccine. We'll also give the clostridial vaccine back at the point in time of when those animals are being banded, and use that tetanus toxoid with those calves. So at the end of the day, the other thing that I really, for me as a feedlot operator, really want is I want to make sure that those calves know how to eat and how to drink. So the keys to the weaning are doing some sort of soft wean method, whether it's fence line weaning or something that you can do to help those calves with maternal separation. Make sure that they know how to eat, make sure they know how to drink, and make sure that they've had at least a vaccination, a modified live vaccine at branding, a blackleg at some point in time of their life. And then when they come in for weaning, we're going to go ahead and hit those animals with that modified live viral vaccine, the five-way modified live, hit them with the clostridial, hit them with the Mannheimia. I'm not big on the Haemophilus vaccines. I'm not big on Moraxella bovis vaccines or mycoplasma vaccines. But just work with your veterinarian on the vaccine part. You focus on the husbandry part.
Great stuff. I want to conclude just by asking you, are there other things that we haven't covered? I mean, there's lots of things we haven't covered, of course, but are there other things that are on your mind out there working with beef producers right now that you want to make sure that we remember?
I just think that healthy cows equal healthy calves. You know, I guess the one thing I'd say is don't forget about those open heifers and the bulls on your premise. You know, we hit them all now today, but you know, if we focus on good stockmanship, you know, and get help. Don't sit there. This is a big investment. You own 150, 200. You own 20 head of cattle. This business is big, and so there's lots of people out there that want to help, and will help you work with your local veterinarian, your extension agent. You know, I guess I was telling our students the other day at Iowa State, you know, enjoy the process, the miracles of these calves and the miracles of our neighbors, and watching those geese fly overhead right now, and people getting crops out. And I guess don't forget about the calves while we're getting the crops out, and enjoy the process and enjoy the cool fall weather. And just, we're so blessed to be in this industry.
Dan, I really appreciate the time. Good conversation.
I appreciate y'all having me on, and this is a great show, and I love listening to it, and I'm just kind of humbled to get to be on it.
I really took away several keys from my visit with Dan. He has a lot of hands-on practical information that you can put to use. If you are a cattle producer, I hope you've had a good fall. And for crop producers out there, many of you are now done with harvest. We finished our harvest this week. It was a good year for the corn and soybeans here, and I'm glad we've got them in the bin for the season. That's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you next time on Farming the Countryside. The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for, the nitrogen that stays put, weather or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com.